Centered on the foremost section of the rear deck, Rachel spied a familiar one-man Triton submersible hanging on a giant winch. The Triton, named for the Greek god of the sea, looked nothing like its predecessor, the steel-encased Alvin. The Triton had a hemispherical acrylic dome in front, making it look more like a giant fishbowl than a sub. Rachel could think of few things more terrifying than submerging hundreds of feet into the ocean with nothing between her face and the ocean but a sheet of clear acrylic. Of course, according to Tolland, the only unpleasant part of riding in the Triton was the initial deployment, being slowly winched down through the trap door on the Goya's deck, hanging like a pendulum 30 feet above the sea. "Xavier's probably in the hydro lab," Tolland said, moving across the deck. "This way." Rachel and Corky followed Tolland across the stern deck. The Coast Guard pilot remained in his chopper with strict instructions not to use the radio. "Have a look at this," Tolland said, pausing at the stern railing of the ship. Hesitantly, Rachel neared the railing. They were very high up. The water was a good 30 feet below them, and yet Rachel could still feel the heat rising off the water. "It's about the temperature of a warm bath," Tolland said over the sound of the current. He reached toward a switch box on the railing. "Watch this." He flipped a switch. A wide arc of light spread through the water behind the ship, illuminating it from within like a lit swimming pool. Rachel and Corky gasped in unison. The water around the ship was filled with dozens of ghostly shadows. Hovering only feet below the illuminated surface, armies of sleek, dark forms swam in parallel against the current, their unmistakable hammer-shaped skulls wagging back and forth as if to the beat of some prehistoric rhythm.
"Christ, Mike," Corky stammered. "So glad you shared this with us."
Rachel's body went rigid. She wanted to step back from the railing, but she couldn't move. She was transfixed by the petrifying vista.
"Incredible, aren't they?"
Tolland said. His hand was on her shoulder again, comforting.
"They'll tread water in the warm spots for weeks. These guys have the best noses in the sea. Enhanced telencephalon olfactory lobes. They can smell blood up to a mile away."
Corky looked skeptical.
"Enhanced telencephalon olfactory lobes?"
"Don't believe me?"
Tolland began rooting around in an aluminum cabinet adjacent to where they were standing. After a moment, he pulled out a small, dead fish.
"Perfect."
He took a knife from the cooler and cut the limp fish in several places. It started to drip blood.
"Mike, for God's sake," Corky said. "That's disgusting."
Tolland tossed the bloody fish overboard, and it fell 30 feet. Instant it hit the water, 6 or 7 sharks darted in a tumbling, ferocious brawl, their rows of silvery teeth gnashing wildly at the bloody fish. In an instant, the fish was gone. Aghast, Rachel turned and stared at Tolland, who was already holding another fish, same kind, same size.
"This time, no blood," Tolland said. Without cutting the fish, he threw it into the water.
The fish splashed down, but nothing happened. The hammerhead seemed not to notice. The bait carried away on the current, having drawn no interest whatsoever.
"They attack only on sense of smell," Tolland said, leading them away from the railing. "In fact, you could swim out here in total safety, provided you didn't have any open wounds."
Corky pointed at the stitches on his cheek.
Tolland frowned. "Right. No swimming for you."